Blog Talk Radio.
Freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron and Cap tomorrow night as the After Midnight Bombers. And then Wednesday, delve into the world of, Thursday, delve into World of Strange Magic with Ingrid O'Hara Dust and Victoria Frost. Fridays are split between Crawling into the Darks with Pam and Break on Through. Saturday, join up Asiana and Pabla as they teach you the fine arts of part sinner, part saint. And then on Monday mornings, join Victoria Frost and Versus Goliath with the hearts of LNP. These shows are designed to shoot and color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam, what's going on?
Well, you know, just same old, same old. But I am looking forward to tonight's show. We've got a great mix. We've got, poetry inspired by the musical Rent. And then we've got some carryovers, which were actually originally from an Art of Seduction show. So it should be a nice mix-up. And how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Awesome. I tell you, though, I walked to the store earlier, got home about 45 minutes before the show was going to start, was trying to tell a easily distracted teenager what exactly I needed her to do, and in the meantime, I'm trying to get stuff copied and pasted in All Poetry, and there is such a temperature difference between my house and the outside in an air-conditioned store that I just was dripping sweat all over the Kindle Fire, and the Kindle Fire shut down because it was like, nope, nope, not doing this. You're sweating on me. I'm not going to handle this. So, yeah. But that, yeah, you know, that was just my fun evening. And, yeah. You know, I don't know. You ever seen the musical Rent? Okay. Well, I didn't think so, but I thought I'd ask. But personally, I mean, I know not a lot of guys are into musicals, but me personally, I love musicals. Now, Rent isn't one of my all-time favorites, but I have to give it kudos for what it is. And that is because a lot of musicals kind of give that element of fantasy that you want to, you know, like everything is almost too good. But Rent has a gritty feel of reality to it, because it's, you know, about the AIDS epidemic and poverty, and it's brought into, you know, current times. So I will admit I do indulge in the ones that, you know, like actually one of my all-time favorites is, what is that? The one with Audrey Hepburn and Rex Harrington, My Fair Lady. That's like my okay. all-time favorite. Yes, yes. But and I go on too much about musicals, but I do enjoy them, and you know. And I am gonna go ahead. And are you ready for our guest?
Yes, our guest already. Sure, why not? Bring him on in.
All right. Well, first of all, I'm going to bring on the birthday boy, Tom. Happy birthday,
hello.
Tom.
Oh, well, thank you much. Yeah, I like
happy
the
birthday,
fact that
Tom.
I make it for 71 so far and still look young.
Well, there you go. That's the best birthday present ever, you know?
Oh, yeah.
71 and still having fun.
Yep, absolutely.
And then I'm also going to bring on.
Now you've got everybody on musical. Bill is dropping South Pacific. Hey, let's give one up for Rocky Horror Picture Show.
South Pacific, Camelot, The King and I.
Oh,
My
so
Fair
many,
Lady.
So many good ones.
I grew up
the King
on
and
all
I.
My mother loved
oh,
them.
Oh, yeah. I actually, I have a habit of breaking out into song, and for every little thing, even though I'm a horrible singer. And my daughter will say, why the hell is living with you like living in a musical? Is there anything that can be said that doesn't bring a song to your head?
Oh, I'm bad. I make up musical lyrics to explain what's going on in the house sometimes. Drives my wife crazy.
Well, I tell you what, I've brought Felon on, so welcome, Felon. Glad you could join us.
Hello.
And we'll just all have to get
hello,
together,
Felon.
Write, and
hey,
perform
Felon.
A musical.
Happy birthday, Tom.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good to have you join us, Felon. How's it going?
Pretty good. Just got off this morning, so I can stay up for a little bit with you guys.
Oh, goodness. Rocky Horror is definitely, like one of my all-time favorites. Adore that song, Sweet Transvestite. And then I do it. So Tim Curry was just perfect for that role.
Oh, well, he almost didn't make the movie.
Yeah, I remember reading that, right? Yep. Because didn't they have somebody that was more well-known or something? Or
They wanted some American actors to play those parts. And they said, no, you get the original cast as is for that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, that, and you know, and he did do awesome in that role. So I have to say that I'm glad they went with that choice. All right. Well, looks like everybody's having fun on the board, and let's go ahead and get things rolling. Sounds good, Rex? All right. Tom, I put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
We are the light. Dreams don't pay the rent after all the money spent. Dreams may be what is needed to help you be strong, to keep your heart singing life's true song. What's that song that love calls? What is the song that love calls? What is the song for another's heart? What is a song to get up after a fall? Believe, we are the song if we believe. There's a light that lies within. It shines even when we sin. It guides us when we will listen. It helps us stay upright when smitten. For love will steal us away, even as we are wary of being betrayed. Can you dance? Can you dance? The music is in your heart. Call it romance, take a chance. We are ready right from the start. All along we have known right from wrong. We pretend we are doomed when we swoon, but the truth is we know where we belong. Your arms are my home, and I long to feel them wrap around my heart. You and me, we knew it was we from the start. What is a song that love calls? What is a song for another's heart? What is a song to get up after a fall? Believe, we are the song if we believe. We are the light when night falls. End poem.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. All right, let's get some comments. Phil, let's start with you, girl.
I really like this, Tom. I picked the same song, but I went with a different approach than you did. But I like right here where you said, all along we have known right from wrong. We pretend we are doomed when we are swing. But the truth is we know where we belong. Your arms are my home, and I long to feel you wrap about my heart. You and me, we know it from the start. I like that because it's basically no matter what the world throws at you, you're still going to be together, and you're still there for one another. So this is an excellent, excellent take on the prompt, and happy birthday again.
Oh, thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you there, Phil. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. First of all, it has a wonderful lyrical quality with the repetitive lines and, the way it flows. So I really like that. I like how this doesn't deny that bad things happen, the people get betrayed. People have trouble paying the rent. There are struggles in life. But, no matter what's happening, as Felon was touching upon, you can be positive. What I really like is you mentioned being the light, which is something that's been mentioned in other poetry before. But you go a step farther and say we can be the song because, song and music, it's so important to be a light to shine towards people, that kind of positive energy. But there's something about music that can just comfort those who are hurt and, just lift people up, lift up spirits. And I like that you put this in some questions in here, like, can you dance? Can you dance? Music is our hearts. Call it romance. Take a chance. We are ready right from the start. Those lines in particular, I could see being part of a musical. I would still be enthralled watching somebody dance and sing those lines. And so really just an excellent write on being positive no matter what life throws at you. So very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you very much. Tom, this hits me up with the thought of resilience, because you hit on dreams up top in the two of the first three lines. Dreams don't pay the rent after all the money spent. Dreams may be what is needed to help you be strong. So there is that idea of noting where dreams should lie as a base comparison to the overall, hey, I'd like to dream of this, so to speak. But understanding that dreams, some dreams come with a price, while others make sure that you are at least adhering to the present that is going on. You could all fit in on there is light that lies within. It shines even when we sin. And you finish out that stanza, even as we are wary of being betrayed. Now, that again hits on notes of resilience, because you hit that question, what is the song to get up after a fall? And isn't that the song that sings within us naturally, that note of who and what we are, the thought of understanding ourselves? And in knowing ourselves, we can then understand and know others, or at least have an inkling in that that realm. But you also said something else, that second or last stanza. But the truth is, we know where we belong. Your arms are my home, and I long to feel them wrap about my heart. You and me, we knew it was we from the start. So it hits on those. There's going to be, even with the light, there's a touch of darkness. And even though you might fall hard, you've got to also understand, you got to get up. Because sometimes the fall is worse than actually standing up afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I used to work with teenagers. I used to tell them real simple: when you are in a negative place, you're guaranteeing the results. The only place where there's an opportunity is being positive.
There you go. Yeah,
you know, why get into a
play
if you're gonna lay down and say I give up?
Yeah, I said that song by Monty Python. Always look on the bright side of life.
That's a cool song.
You know, people may call you crazy, but you have a much better chance of getting to where you want to go if you keep a positive outlook. Yeah.
Well, and even if you don't get to where you want to go, at least you had fun getting to where you were meant to be, or getting lost, you know, however you end up, for whatever reason, at least with a positive attitude, you've not only most likely had more fun, but you've also probably made more friends. All right. Ready for the next one?
Yes.
All right. Up next is your poem, Felon. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Here we go. It's called Time Flies, and it's for the same prompt, I believe. Tom just used For the Glory, I believe it is. Yeah. And it goes like this. Long gone story, long gone. Encore, last fold. Story long gone, youth. Reads confined, time's wrong story. Wrongs. Bask insane, story numb flees with witty coy as it haunts land. Truth faces brutally, long gone, brings nomads. Belief unfurled left to attack, twisted defeat. Story blends grief to rise. Above the today's hung world time story. Bond deletes sleep-covered light. Long gone, snores reek. Spunt death's story, drawn tougher to dignity strife. Lines divide, story, wrong grave above the story, wrong grave above its story soaring, time story sins today, wrongs the past clings to youth, youth spite to today's grazing, all flowers, hands of universal blame, time gone wrong today, wrong sprout not enough to death, so story numbs belief cold, above today's hung rants, late tongue grants, time free, long gone. Divorce, belief, bias that creates holes, story, spite today's tongue of the guest. Long gone grew dreams as dignity survives. Lines divide, land thin, hopes bleed pure blue, pure evils, poor lines arise, end point. I know that makes kind of sense, but it's we're bored of the rhyming scheme.
Great read, Phil. Thank you very much. Let's get you some comments. Tom, you want to kick us off, please?
No, I'm still thinking here. Sorry.
I'll come back to you. Pam, bring it in.
Well, I really like this. First of all, I see that you have a bigger word count than usual. So I see you stepped outside of your comfort zone. Maybe not your comfort zone, but you did something a little different than usual. So that's, you know, always really cool when somebody does something like that. I like how you really focus on how time. Well, first of all, the title says it. Time flies, and the thing is that time passes no matter how we spend it, no matter if we spend it, who we spend it with. I really like time's wrong story, wrongs vast and sane, story numb flees, witty coy as it hunts land. You know, I feel like that right, there's that focuses on kind of like a history, whether it's a personal history or the history of mankind. But and I like the whole idea of time being almost like a coy mistress or a coy lover that is just going to take over everything and everyone. Let's see. Well, it's wonderful all the way through. But I like bond, delete, sleep, covered light, long gone, hours, weeks, spent, death, story, drawn, cover, to dignity, strife. You know, I do think, it's interesting to me, especially within that stanza, how you and Tom wrote for the same prompt, and you took it in a darker tone. And I think for me, and especially in that stanza, I get the whole idea of the approaching of death, or that death has already come, and it doesn't always just come to, it comes to everybody. And lay tongue grant, time free, long gone, divorce believes bias that creates holes, story spite today's tongue that we get. You know, I think when we all get to the end of our life, and you know, I could be wrong, but I think we're gonna. We even before the end, we can look back at our past, and we know who have been true friends and who haven't. And especially, you know, when going through hard times, you know, and you really in those ending lines, you really there's I like blue, pure evil pores. I like the that you use the color blue in the fact that, first of all, I think of the blue flame, which burns the longest and the hottest. I also think of the way blue is a very calming color, and also, like, I think of water, and I think, I don't know, it's hard to describe. Like, I think of the monster in the deep, but kind of like in a metaphorical way. Like that monster that's hidden beneath the surface. Anyways, well, I really like how your poetry always has a very layered feel to it. Excellent write and very well done, Felon.
Thank you. Thank you so much, ma'am.
You ready there, Tom? You want me to go for you?
Yeah, I'm ready. I got it.
Okay.
I just was... initially, I was caught up with the sound of the words, and I had to stop and come back to the meaning, because there's a real almost beat. I guess it's supposed to be put it beat to the way the words work in this, and I was really getting off on the rhythm and how the sounds built up on each other. it's a whole part of poetry and why I like to listen to poetry being read aloud, because the way the words sound and work together has a lot to do with the feelings and the energy that the poem produces. And when I went back and started reading it for meaning, it began to really talk about how we're constantly at war with where we have been versus where we want to go and how we want to get there. And it's a combination of both time and our own efforts. And I like the way you did the truth pasted brutally, long gone, brings nomads belief unfurled, left to attack, twisted defeat, story blends, grief to rise above today's hung world, time, story, this whole sense of the way the story keeps moving, and yet at the same time how time wars with us, time, story, sins, today's wrongs, a past cling to youth, spite today, grazing off liars, hands of universal blame, the sense that as much as the story is there, the way the story is twisted and misused affects the way people's beliefs and their actions are created. It really catches a lot of both the past and the present and the way they interact and have a large effect on how we act. And I just found myself delighting in the, and I guess Pam says, the way you layered meaning into this. And if I was going to take any one single thought, which really struck me strongest, was the feeling that the most important thing is that the story be told honestly and clearly, because when we start to misuse our history and misuse the truth about what's going on in the present, then we do have line divides, land thin, hopes bleed blue, pure evils pour, vines rise. So true. Absolutely. Very good work.
Thank you, Tom. You hit it right on the nail. Thank you so much. And so did Pam.
Well said, Thomas. I was walking along your thoughts there, too. I like starting off with the title, Time Flies. It does. And in that time flying, we oft forget that which has come before. And those voices and words that were spouting one thing not so long ago, but are now roiling on a totally 360-degree circuit of what they now say. And it hits on those thoughts that you hit on. Story is your whole thing that sits in here besides time. Times, stories, sins today, wrongs are past, clings to youth. Youth spite today, grazing off liars, hands of universal blame. Time gone wrong. Today's wrong sprouts, not so tough. Story numbs belief cold above today's hung rants. And then again, what he had a, where was it? Divorce beliefs bias that creates whole story, spite today's tongue of beget. I do like the thought you offered up, the hoax bleeds pure blue, pure evils for, and there's a truth to that, especially if people aren't willing to they take it at face value instead of actually looking between the lines and doing the a little touch of investigative work themselves. Become a little bit too lazy in the thought of believing that which is uttered, rather than making sure what was uttered was actually true to begin with, or it's just a cleverly masked narrative that is supposed to generate something within.
Right on, Rex, right on. Thank you.
You're very welcome. See, I'm getting into your metaphors. You the hell, that was a hell of a piece too.
You are getting in my head there.
And Tom was right with the, I got hung on the sound too, and I had to, wait a minute, I'm not even digging into this, and I had to go back and read the second time. Just okay, yeah, I did get what you were doing.
1 hour.
Yeah, if you read with the actual song, the lyrics, you'll see that it would read a whole lot better if someone was to sing it with the melody. than just reading it out loud. It doesn't read as well. But I think if you was to put it to a song, it would be a lot better.
Oh, well.
You
should have sung it then.
Really changed everything.
No, I'm not. I'm so sleepy. We ran our butts off last night, so had some crazy stuff. It wasn't even a full moon. I don't know what it was.
Oh, okay. Another hot Atlanta evening.
Yes, it was. We had some people drag racing, and somebody thought they would just be smart and try to run across in front of them and on a ATV, a four-wheeler. I was like, wow.
That's too brilliant.
He didn't make it. Yeah. I mean, he lived. But, I mean, he didn't make it across all the way. He got clipped. What an idiot.
Yeah.
Alcohol involved, of course.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Fun time.
That took us a minute, but, yeah, it was pretty interesting.
All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
You know, I have to say, when it comes to commenting on Fallon's poem, I feel like I got shoved in the deep end of the pool first. So you guys would have me test the water.
Come on top, girl.
And then you're all like, woohoo, yay, we got it right. We're such awesome commenters. Of course you're awesome swimmers. I tested the water for you.
Oh, my God.
All right, well, now we are going to go into some carryovers from The Art of Seduction. And so up next, we have The Place I Trust by Grant G. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
The Place I Trust by Grant G. When life throws those things at me which can make a heartbeat sad, the death of family, another war torn land, my eyes might fill with moistened sadness, making me feel bad. The world, it carries on without me. Yes, it can be that sad. Flowers grow that I don't see, bees buzz that I can't hear, birds sing their morning songs, silent to my ears. Water splashes in the stream, spraying little pearls, a salmon leap catching flies, but I can't turn the reel. I sit there head in hand, trying to understand why in life does war exist when man is killing man. I toss and turn every night, nightmares in my mind, then to feel her lying near, her love always I find. Her lips I can't turn away, she kisses like sweet breeze, her scent, the warmth, her giggle, man, I love her tease. I take her hand and gently squeeze, I'll now survive this night. The moon, he hangs above me, I've now regained all sight.
Well, why don't we kick it off with you?
I like this, Grant G. Really, I do. I mean, I didn't see it coming at first. You know, I kind of should have said, the death of family, a crying child, another war-torn land. My eyes might fill with moistened sadness, making me feel bad. The world, it carries on without me. Yes, it can be sad. Basically, him over in wartime, you know, actually on the fields of battle, and yet here are the things that the things we sometimes take for granted, like hearing the bees buzz and hearing the birds sing in the morning and just, you know, the strings flowing. And those are beautiful moments, and we take them for granted. Yet here someone is just wanting to see and hear those things, and yet they're over there protecting what we have today for our freedom. And yet the last thing before his eyes is his loved one. And like what he says, her lips, I can't turn away. She kisses like sweet breeze, her scent, her warmth, her giggle. Man, I love her tease. That is just absolutely sweet and endearing, and I like that. That speaks truly of love and union. This is an excellent write from Grant Gene, and I'm glad he shared this with us.
Nicely said, Sal. Thanks. And Pam.
Yeah, I really like this, and I really like Grant's style. He has, most of the time, like really short, impactful lines. He tends to write about kind of that raw, gritty reality of it seems like inner city life of people who struggle and of addiction. And I noticed he has some lines in here that are a little longer than usual, but they work really well because they mention some really important stuff, like, you know, the death of a family, crying child in a way, war-torn land. Now, this is a really good poem. It did kind of throw me off a little bit being in The Art of Seduction, but I thought, you know, honestly, this I feel like is a poem that on After Midnight than the Art of Seduction. And that isn't saying anything bad about it. It's got a real kind of brutal honesty to it. But it does fit well into the realm of love and because, you know, because of the fact, as I said in my short comment, that it was a hard-hitting write on how love gets us through most soul-crushing times. You know, this isn't just a write about a man who comes home and he's bummed because, I don't know, you know, whatever, you know, he's getting cut back by a few hours or whatever reason, you know, maybe the dishes didn't get done. You know, this is a man who, and a woman, a man and a woman together who are watching, whether it's on the news or in their place where they live, people killing each other, people betraying each other, people being just inhumane to and ugly and brutal. But through it all, what they have is each other, each other's words, each other's bond, their touch, their kiss, those just quiet moments of joy and pleasure together. So I really like this write, and it's very well done.
I think that, Pam, thank you. This was a little bit different from Grant. It's normally, well, like you said, it's normally on the brevity side, but he usually sticks with a singularity when he writes, too. This offers up two sides of a coin, which is a kind of stark, because those first four stanzas are melancholy, blue. They're bleak in their representation, and the fact that he is blind in that second stanza to the notability of nature, the flowers, the bees, the birds, the water in the stream. All of that musicality should offer up something, but they don't in the moment. Those first four stanzas are kind of dark and dreary. Yet he, number five, and then the short four line to finish with, all hits a different tone because there is something there that brings him out of his melancholy, his sadness, his depressed state, and it turns him on his head. And I did like those last 10 lines. They work well, and they brighten up the piece from its beginnings to the point where, okay, understand why you went this way. You needed, she's your foil in the moment, lightening the darkness that you walk in with. Because he hits on that note of, I sit there head in hands trying to understand why in life this war exists when man is killing man. That's a dark turn there, and then the tossing every night, and then just the reach over for the squeeze of hand offers up a note of not just accountability in the moment. There is something more than just the ugliness that you are pondering on heavily. All right, Pam, back to you.
Absolutely. That was really well said there, Rex. Just one more thing I'd like to quickly point out is this was written for the Neruda contest, and I actually think that this works really well with Grant's voice inspired by Neruda because of the fact that, you know, Neruda touched so much on love and loss in his poetry. Now I am moseying on and getting us to the next poem, which is Serenity at Dawn by Joplin J. And it goes like this. Tempted to awake before the dawn, as oneself before the nude, embarrassed he or she be, but true, the body is natural, seducing as of music, enticing the user to get close, and sway into the melody, getting hypnotized by the dawn. Awake, but asleep, some may be, and the nude senses are sped up, and some as stiff as trees, the bed softened by the curves, love and nude, especially sweet in serenity, in an awestruck moment where eyes meet and true love sparks, where seduction by nude is similar to being pulled in by a masterpiece of art. The colors and emotions tie everything together and make everything just as perfect. That and poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Phil, what do you think of this?
Oh, I like this. I like the metaphor in it where it says here, awake but sleep some may be in the nude. Senses are sped up, and some as stiff as trees in the bed, softened by the curves. I like that because basically he's saying that he is ready to go. He's saluting her in the morning, but it's all due because her nice little soft, tender skin that's got the little curves just perfect for him. And love is nude, especially sweet, is serenity, an awestruck moment where eyes meet and true love sparks. I like the rhyme scheme in it as well. I mean, he's got a different kind of cadence going on, and I like that. I like that they stepped out of the box and done what they wanted to do with the rhyme, and it does have a cadence to it, and to me, I like that. And it wasn't their little sappy poem. It was something that was seductive, but yet at the same time tender, and it offered something more than just the smut. So I like that. That adds class to it. Excellent job.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. All right, Pam, you got to read it.
Yeah, this was fun with some clever metaphor and illusion, but it also, at the same time, well, it had the metaphor, the illusion that I can truly appreciate, especially in that, you know, the stanza that Felon mentioned about, you know, being ready in the morning. But I also like how there's parts where it has a very straightforward style, where it's those last two stanzas where it just talks about, you know, appreciating, being drawn in by a lover's nudity. And there really is something very trusting and honest and raw about sleeping next to somebody in the nude. I also like where it says, seducing is of music, enticing the user to get closer and sway into the melody. I like the whole idea there of, like, using the movement of the body, the swaying of the curves, the swaying of the hips, and drawing, you know, the lover in with the kind of almost rhythm that a body can have. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
Well said. All right. JJ used nude in here 5 times, and I think that is necessary for the thought being generated. For me, the nude is more of an abstract and metaphor being used in here because it hits on a number of thoughts. And it always hits dawn a couple of times as well, which sparks my thoughts going towards look at sketching, pencil sketches, and before you actually get down to painting or adding color to the motif, you get everything in pencil sketches, nice outlines to be drawn on. And that's where you hit on these moments of tempted to wait before the dawn as oneself before the nude. Embarrassed he or she be, but true, the body is natural. Kind of hits on that notion of penciling somebody before they wake while they're still lying in bed. Seducing is of music, enticing me usually to get close and sway into the melody, getting hypnotized by the dawn. Again, at that crowning moment, the dawn, that offering of light streaming through the window, which gives a nice pose and offers a shadow to your motif. Awake for the sleep, some may be in the nude, senses are sped up, and some are stiff as trees, the bed softened by the curves. Again, that motif. Stiff as trees could mean a four-poster bed, that offering in the picture itself. What else we got in here? And that last one kind of draws it in. Seduction by nude is similar to being pulled in by a masterpiece of art. The colors and emotions tie everything together and make everything just as perfect. had that joy of someone elucidating those moments all along the line of actually putting a portrait together in some fashion.
I
all
like
right,
that.
Back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Just the Right Dosage by Theo Amick. And Fallon, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. I just put this person in the room. Sorry. It's called, by Theo Amick, it's called Just the Right Dosage. It's soft, the breeze touching your heart, in mending tones of love and hate. Love and hate until there's nothing left but pure love. Pure love for everything. Dear child that lost a fight, there's a tomorrow for you to lose. That which is hurtful, and when that which is right, internal love. Oh, but how they made you suffer. A recomposition from hell to hell's response. And it's not hell on earth. Brought by the might of gods, the wrath of skies, the one of lords, the might, all-powerful of God. That which is hurtful is to love much, is to love much. But to love much, love can heal, can make forget, can make forgot, and heal. It's too much love that can make one forget, forget, and heal. End point.
Great read, Spell. Thank you
Thank you very much.
All right, Pam. Give you up.
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, great read there, Fallon.
Thank you.
Just the Right Dosage. I like that. I like that title. Let's see here. Dear child that lost a fight, there is tomorrow for you to lose that which is hurtful and win that which is right, eternal love. I really appreciate those lines. I really appreciate how there's kind of this battle between love and hate, this whole idea of almost a battle between good and evil, and learning, but on a very epic and almost spiritual level, but also on a personal level. Like the idea, it brings to mind that saying, you know, don't go to bed angry. You know, sometimes you just have to take a step away. But let's see, the wrath of skies, the one of lords, the might, all powerful God, that which is hurtful, is it too much love? Is it too much love? But too much love can heal. I like that she questions, is there such a thing as too much love? And then it says repetitive. There's such a repetitiveness of how love can make us forget and love can heal. And I think those are beautiful sentiments, especially the whole idea of making us heal. But then, you know, there's a part of me that thinks, you know, like there's such a kind of romantic notion to the idea of moving forward, of healing with somebody, you know. But there's also this kind of notion of, do we find ourselves so enraptured in what we think is love that we forget to look for the warning signs? And I know that's kind of a dark thought for a sensual piece, but that's just kind of some of the thoughts that my mind had. But as always, I think her writing is powerful and emotive, and she really knows how to use a repetitive line quite well. So that's excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And, Belle, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, what I got from this was basically is saying that, you know, you're gonna fall in love, or you're going to have that first love, and it's probably not going to last. It's probably not going to go any further than it does, and you're going to have all this hurt. But, you know, you got that love, and then you're going to hate. But yet, at the same time, where she says this, where'd it go? That which is hurtful, and when that what which is right. Internal love, because really they're saying that one that you thought you loved was not the one for you, And even though you're going to hurt for them, you just have to sit and wait because the good is to come. You have to wait for that real love that's coming for you. You know, pure love is for everything. Your child that lost the fight, that's the young adult that lost the fight of what they thought was right in their life at the time. But you know what? They didn't, because the win was when they felt or found the true love forever. Oh, but how they made you suffer. A recomposition from hell to hell's response. Because, you know, you just think that, oh, my God, everything is just going to hell. I mean, this is, I will never be in love again. I've already gave my heart to this person, and look what they did to me. And then it says, that which is hurtful is too much love. And that, you know, I get that. I mean, that really hits home. I like to repeat it in some of it. But I says, can't make forget. It's like they're pondering their mind. It's almost like the pondering of something in their mind. It's like bouncing off the rafters in your brain of what you're thinking, and it's just like a chaotic moment of, you know, bargaining with yourself on what you can do and what you can get over. So I think this is an excellent, well-thought-out poem, and, I mean, it really speaks to someone with a broken heart, but it's also that pep talk with inside, too. Excellent job.
Nicely said, Val. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I think that second stanza holds quite the clue as to a good portion of this. Oh, but how they made you suffer, a recomposition from hell to hell's response. And it's not hell on earth brought by the might of gods, the wrath of skies, the one of lords, the might, all powerful of God. There's a note in there, and it's not hell on earth brought by the might of gods. There's a note to that. It is ye who bring that hell to the boundaries of earth itself by indulging in such practice where hate offers up the need to deal with recompense, so to speak. And it's a reminder that to walk in rightly footsteps as well. And then I like the thought offered up in the transposition going in that last stanza. Is it too much love? It's too much love. But too much love can heal. It's too much love that can make one forget. I think there's a good portion that is offering up understand that which is inherent within you. That note to righteousness in belief in God, and I think that's a good portion of it. But I may be wrong.
I like that thought, and I think you're right. You know, and the interesting thing is, and I didn't notice this until you were commenting on it, Rex, is it too much love, and that part right there really does have a conversational tone, almost as if the person is either talking to themselves. Or if you go, like, on the whole spiritual approach, perhaps they're talking to a God, to a higher power. So I think that was a really great observation there.
Where to next?
All right. So up next we have Wrap the Earth by Honey Lynn. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. Wrap the Earth by Honey Lynn. Wrap the earth, O naked body. Let the stars spark in your grand allure. Let the rivers flow in your spirit. For the world is in drought as the wide and vast desert. Let those eyes roll in your curves and be ignited by your strategic contours. For your emblem is burning, and by flame the sun will shine, halo dust will disappear, and the frozen snow caps shall melt upon your feet. Walk into the bare forest till you find comfort from the prickly grasses. If there were butterflies roaming in the meadows, allow them to sip your nectars, till their thirsts quench with satisfaction. Let those flowers be envious, let them bow to their queen. In your nakedness, mountain ranges, volcanoes, hills, and valleys are free to settle. Nonetheless, let them subduct in your greatness. Let their magma flow in your veins. The new earth is forming, literally, upon your hips. You're a needle in a haystack. Only those keen eyes can catch a gold in a mud shines more than those stones scattered around the yard, for your beauty is precious. No other ore is as gleam as your spark, as your luminous smiles speak mystery to a lost soul. O woman, an enigmatic fortress of strength and resiliency, you are the courage lying in every rock, and you bear the fruit of every tree. Anchor your roots in those lands where soils are rich and waters are extravagant. And poem. All right, Pam, you get first dibs.
All right. Well, first of all, great read, Rex. I have to say, I thought that poem would be good in your voice, and it was. I really like how she uses so much nature imagery that connects the strength, the beauty, the sexuality of a woman to the Mother Earth and to the moon. It kind of reminds me of a poem I wrote where you had to, for a contest where you had to write a poem about nudity, but couldn't like mention like body parts or even the word naked or nude. And so in cases like this, it really does well to delve into the realm of imagery and metaphor using nature, because there is such a connection between the way women have the capability to create and give birth and, you know, just and to care for life, and the way that the Mother Earth can do the same thing. But what I really like, I like this all the way through, but I like that it has a wonderful spiritual feel, like that psalm that talks about the woman, you know, and I can't remember which psalm that is, but dang it, I wish I could, but it's 30-something, but anyways, that doesn't matter, but, you know, it gives that kind of feel of all the beautiful characteristics a woman should have and not just the physical. And I really like when she says in the end, oh, woman. You know, there's something about putting the word, it doesn't always work in every poem, but sometimes when you need to grab attention and you need to give this almost tone of reverence, putting oh in there works really well. And but I, you know, I really like how she puts a woman, an enigmatic fortress of strength and resilience, your courage lying in every rock, you bear the fruit of every tree, anchored your roots in those lands. You know, I like the idea that it's not just, you know, what you offer up on the surface, but the roots that you have that give you strength. I think this is just absolutely a gorgeous write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Felon, how about you?
I agree with and echo what Pam says. And for me, it really speaks strength where she says this here. It says, walk into the bare forest till you find comfort from the prickly grasses. If there were butterflies roaming in the meadows, allow them to sip your nectar till their thirst quenched in satisfaction. Let those flowers be envious. Let them bow to their queen. To me, that's saying basically walk into the unknown and everything that's wild. You're still going in with nothing but just who you are, and you're waking. To me, it's like the awakening of bringing those out of the cocoon, those that have been sleeping that have not seen the beauty of that person yet, and yet they're walking in, and that they're there. Let them take a sip of you. Let them feast upon the person that you are and your beauty, and then let everything else be envious of you, because basically, you know, it's saying that Mother Nature, Mother Nature is the one of the creator of all. All God's creatures and beautiful things, as far as that, and women are too. As far as we, you know, when we procreate, we make children, and we are the one that carry the children. Even though you give us a little bit of the, we'll give you a little bit of credit of it, but you know, women are the one that births just, you know, life, and that's what this is birthing nature's life. So I think that the double entendre is excellent, and the metaphors are great as well. Excellent job.
Well said, Val. Thank you very much. Damn, I can't add too much more. You guys already dropped in, but I did like this one stanza here. Since you took my stanza, You're a needle in a haystack only those keen eyes can catch. A gold in a mud shines more than those stones scattered around the yard, for your beauty is precious. No other ore is as green as your spark, and your luminous smile speak mystery to a lost soul. That there's a nice quiet thought in there of taking notice of that which abounds before you naturally, instead of just making casual observations. Breathe in those moments. See beyond the thought of that which just looking at, it's just a damn rock. There's more in that rock than you know. There's mystery. Where did it come from? How did it make its way here? And that's the idea behind Gaia itself, the mystery behind everything it holds. I did like that. That stanza of Bell Red, I did like that. That was cool. Find comfort from the prickly grasses. Nice cut. All right, Pam, we're back at you.
All right. Up next, this will be our last AOS, Art of Seduction, poem, and then we will go on to the ones for the contest for rent. And we have Concupiscence by Iona Cosma, and it goes like this. The tides follow the curves of your thighs, rotund and full. David, who killed 1,000 Goliaths in my mind, blessed the cups of your hands as they reach out for falling drops of rain in the velveteen night. Your decisive feet on top of the world, treading through deserts and brambles, the son of a beggar preacher. Here it is, the fruit of your labor, the son-daughter who drowns in your arms. Lovers beatified by the smell of sweat and golden skin, like blasted pomegranates radiant with red water, the dawn shedding shredded light on entwined elbows, touching joy in an explosion of laughter and sweet mirth. Son of the morning, star, you rise like twinkling rays east of my neck, where our hair entangles, where the feet kiss the moon, fingers frolic, fumble, where our lifelines met south of the Mount of Venus. We were child, we were wind, we were brother in the depths of the abyss. I followed the sinewy lines of your spine, standing erect and naked to behold the great mystery of concupiscent love. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Bell, what do you think about this one?
I need it just another minute, just 1 second, if I could.
All right, cool. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, I don't think so. Not this time, Rex. You can go first.
Well, the title offers up quite a bit. Concupiscence, which is a strong desire and lust. So that gives you a little time to where she's going. Tides follow the curves of your thighs. There's a nice touch right there. Rotund and full, David who killed 1,000 Goliaths. In my mind, bless the cusps of your hand as they reach out for falling drops of rain in the velveteen night. Now the offering up the sort of a strength in those hands in the moment, using David as the motif, the one who killed Goliath. And then again, the thought with on top of the world, it goes right back to mythology and godliness again. The sort of atlas, so to speak. And then the son of a beggar preacher. Here it is, the fruit of your labor, the son daughter who drowns in your arms. Again, essential motif. One down here, I like the thought with the glass of pomegranates, radiant with red water. That was a nice line. And then gets a little deeper in the last, second last stanza. East of my neck where our hair entangles, where the feet kiss the moon, fingers frolic, fumble, where our lifelines met, south of the Mount of Venus. Again, a draw in on Venus, but a little more linguistically sensual tone to it, and I'm going to stop there before I use everything up. So now you get to, Pam. Ha.
All right. Well, first of all, great comment there, Rex. You know, I have to, first of all, agree with Casey. This is a stunning poem. It's intense. It's beautiful. This actually was not an easy contest to judge. I do like how she says, David, who killed 1,000 Goliaths in my mind, blesses the cusps of your hands that reach out for falling drops of rain. You know, there's really something, like, there's this kind of beauty and strength and power that this person sees in their lover. I also like that she went with lovers beatified by the smell of sweat on golden skin. And I'm sure, I have no doubt, Verses probably enjoyed that part. And the blasted pomegranates radiant with red water. There's something very sensual about pomegranates, about the offering up of the seed and the flesh and the meat of the fruit. Let's see. Son of the morning star, you rise like twinkling waves east of my neck. I really like how that within that stanza, the sexuality, the physical interaction between the lovers just becomes so much more intense, so much more like reaching that point where they are completely lost in each other physically and emotionally. I think this is absolutely a beautiful light and very well done.
All right, Phil, what'd you get?
I think that when you write a poem of this nature, you have to start off with something very strong and something that gets the reader's eye and gets their attention. And this does just that, and it just keeps your attention because it makes you really think. For something to stump me and make me have to go back and read it a couple of times, she did her work. She did it well. I like where here it says, "Your decisive feet on top of the world, treading through deserts and brambles, the son of a beggar preacher. Here it is, the fruit of your labor. The son daughter who drowns in your arms." To me, that states that, you know, he is the deciding factor of he knows his guidance or his path is going to be where everybody follows, and that's that of God or whoever they are trying to say. For me, that's what my perception is. You know, that they can go through anything, and then the son of the beggar preacher, you know, that Jesus Christ, here he is, he's the fruit of your labor, the son and daughter who drowns in your arms. I really like that. I mean, this is a very well thought out a poem, as well as probably convictions to her beliefs, and I think she really nailed it as far as, you know, being someone that is of, when you actually lust and sinful for someone else's, to, you know, flesh, but yet there is beauty in it. I think when she ends it in that, she ends it just beautifully, where she says the great mystery of conspicuous love, and that's the greatest, you know, it's the most greatest desire for sex, but or sexual desire, but at the same time, it's one of union and love. So I think she really nailed that, and no pun intended. But, I mean, I think she did very well with marrying all of this together and making a very classic poem. Excellent job.
Well said, Phil. You're right, because the pomegranate represents life, the beauty in life, and the sweetness of heaven. All right, Pam, back to you.
All right, I'll just go ahead and grab the next poem. And like I said, we're moving on to Rent. So if anybody was planning on calling in for that that hasn't yet, this would be a good time to do that. All right. So up next, we have The Gift of Love by Star BG. And that has a recording. So here we go.
The Gift of Love by Star Blossom Goddess. Inside heartbeats of love, musical notes vibrate inside style and grace. They swirl around inside friendships accumulated as Broadway street lamps flicker, as daytime and nighttime moments vibrate in life journey. We rise to face day in cups of coffee shrouded in time, in memories so dear etched into celebrations of love. Units of time move in a evolving season as dark and light integrate and magical fluorescent doorways ingrained in melodies are sung. Ask thyself each morning how to step into power of love, how to move with energies pure of being in day's mystery with light of hug and about being authentic to celebrate love. Precious seasons of love are here, here to live in divine journey. I love you, family and friends, inside the expanding breath. Dance of love is sweet. Come dance as we rent these human forms and sing, sing, sing the journey of love.
Thank you very much for the time, Clive. We greatly appreciate it.
Time.
All right, Pam. Rent. No rent but today. So, are you going to rent?
Yes. Well, first of all, I really enjoyed this. But well, one of the things, first of all, that I really enjoyed is Star BG's enthusiasm for the contest. She was telling me that she actually has a corner in her house, like a wall, just completely dedicated to stuff from the musical Rent, posters and stuff like that. And so she was very excited to be able to write for this. You know, I like this, the back of the, what was the intro song for the show tonight, and the song she had in the background was the song that most people wrote to for this contest. And I think that's because it's something that we can all connect with, is the whole idea of how do we decide how a person's life is measured, how do we value life. There's no exact science to it. It's all about, you know, we are human, we all struggle, and we all love, we all hate. And, you know, I think for me, what I really like is she says, like, she throws in the science terms, like, you know, 525, 600,000 units of time move and evolve and season as dark and light integrate and magical fluorescence doorways ingrained in melodies are sung. There's kind of this whole, it's not just, it's the science of light and time moving, but it's also how there's almost this mysticism to it, this kind of feeling of just energy. And she says it there, how to move with energies pure of being in day's mystery with light of hug and about being authentic to celebrate love. And I like how she calls it the journey of love at the end, because, you know, it's like that saying that it's not about getting to the destination. It's about the journey. And, you know, are you going to look back at your journey and say, yes, I took time to celebrate love. I took time to be a force to be reckoned with of positive energy. And, you know, I just really like that thought. And I like this. I think this is a beautiful poem and great recording and very well done.
Nice to sit, Pam. And, Stella, how about you?
Oh, I love her reading of this. And then the music going along with the back, it was like it was supposed to be, like it was meant to be, you know, where it was with each thing she was saying. Because I was getting kind of caught up in the moment of her reading and then hearing that 5,225, 600, whatever. And it would just like come at the right time. I'm like she timed it perfectly. I mean, I don't know if she meant to do that or if it just happened, but it was genius, whatever, however it was done. And I mean, her voice, it just really captures you as well. And the thing where she talks about waking up in the morning to drink your coffee. And you do, you know, when you do wake up, you do have, you know, usually have a moment of, you know, something that happened great in your life, or you think of someone special, or I don't think I'd wake up in a crappy ass mood going, shit. But I usually wake up like, oh yeah, ha ha ha. And I think that she captured that very well. And I like her writings, and I think she's new to the board, and I enjoy what she brings. So I can't wait to see what she brings next. Excellent job.
Well said there, Phil. Thank you. Is 525,600, is that a reference in this thing, or is that just?
That's the number. I don't know for sure what the actual reference is, but it is the number they use in the song.
Okay. All right. Then it's got to be in relationship to something within the hour, within the day, maybe.
Sorry. Because the song is about measuring the year of a life, of somebody's life, like deciding the value of 1 year. I'm wondering, do you think that's maybe the number of seconds?
No.
Connected.
Because there are 641,600 seconds in 7 days. I already thought of that. That's why I was asking, is there a particular reference to the 525,600?
I don't know for sure then.
Well, anyway, all right. Day in cups of coffee shrouded in time, in memory so clear, etched in celebrations of love. And again, 525,600 units of time. That's a bit more specific. That could
minutes
be
in a year.
Oh, okay. Cool. And then I did, where is it? Down here, dance with love is sweet, come dance as we rent these human forms and sing the journey of love. Okay, so the thought with the numbers does make a little bit more sense in the fact that a year or a lifetime or something generating along those notes is quite the thought itself. Different. Had any questions. All right, what's this? Thank you. And then she offers up 525,600 breaths. And now you got to figure out, all right, how many breaths do you take in a minute? Well, that could be a hell of a, all right, let's do this. No, thank you. I can't do that. But I get the story. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right. Up next is The Bohemian Life by Casey Day. And Felon, will you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, I would be happy to. And I hope Casey.
When it gets to the end where it says no, you don't have to read that part, okay?
Okay. You could read what part now? The end? Where'd it go? I just read fresh. Where'd it go? 1 second here. Here we go. By Casey Day, The Bohemian Life. To many, my ancestry and ethnicity is just a style, a fashion. Though my ancestors found happiness in poverty and created ways to survive war after war, a truly resilient and strong people who immigrated into some of the harshest lands in the U.S. at the time. They were made into Hollywood gypsies. My true culture has been forgotten. Because the idea of an unconventional carefree lifestyle was romanticized. Bohemia is one of the most historical regions of Czech land. With the Western civilization, it has become a fashion statement because of one French artist play, Scènes de la Vie de Bohemian, where Henri Murger wanted to be a glorified legitimate of Bohemian. As the time, Bohemians were looked down on for their lack of order, but instead, he sparked the romanticism and the degradation of an entire people and culture. Later on, other works were published. In Rent, they celebrate the Western idealization of Bohemian culture and even mock the death of Bohemian and saying the culture should have died with what once was the king of Bohemian. There were so few of us left that nobody cares, but at least now you know. Note, the question to the reader. There you go. End point.
Great read. Oh, thank you very much. Pam. Yourself.
Well, I really like this. I like that Casey took a different approach, and she did this informative write for us. I think it is important to remember, you know, because in the musical they have a song about the bohemian lifestyle and how it's the carefree lifestyle and how it's dying. And I think the musical and the song makes a good point within its frame, within its reference. But I think it is also important to remember that, you know, such people, cultures, you know, like the Eastern European cultures, like the Czechoslovakians, the Hungarians, the ones, the Romanians, you know, the ones that we often think of as just gypsies that, you know, wear colorful clothes and dance around and whatever other kind of like glorified versions of people, of gypsies that we've kind of the bohemian lifestyle that, you know, has been glorified by Hollywood and by books and movies. It's important to remember that this is a people who have, you know, been resilient. You know, now I can't speak much for Czechoslovakia, but I do know that my father is half Hungarian, and you know the Hungary was a country that changed hands and changed names a lot, and when you're a kind of country of people that goes through that much change, you are a people that has to find something to connect, to keep yourself from being forgotten. And a lot of times it is through the written word, the music, the passing on of stories and tradition that a culture survives. And I think when somebody writes a poem like this, I think, and even though it, you know, it's not poetic, but it's important, and it's like Casey's way of not only educating people, but helping to keep her history and her culture alive. So I think this is an excellent write. I like the way she was inspired, and it's very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. All right, so you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, I really like this. Casey, you did a wonderful job at expressing your ancestry, and that, you know, there's nothing to be frowned upon. I think it's beautiful that when people get to migrate to this great nation and make something of themselves, I don't care how poor you are or whatever, I think wealth is in the characteristics of the person and then what they give and what they give and offer the next person. So it's not materialistic things or where you live. It's who you are. So I think that you captured that very well. And you, I think you brought a great tribute to your culture. Excellent job.
Thank you, Bethel. Make great points in here. Hollywood turned them into gypsies. Unconventional thoughts. I mean, you look at Soho and district in New York given over to the artsy crowds in the 60s, early 70s, they were thought to be living the bohemian lifestyle, so to speak. And it's a takeoff on the thought that Bohemia itself once was a kingdom that sat underneath the Holy Roman Empire. So it had its own wealth and history, and yet got split apart and robbed and swallowed up into Greater Czechoslovakia after the war itself. So, and there were a lot of people who were German speaking and thought they belonged in the Austro-Hungary section, but that didn't matter to those powers that be that wanted them as part of the newly created Czech Republic. So, cheers, Casey. People shouldn't forget where things are. I mean, that's the idea of destroying culture is negating that which came before and that which is part of your heritage and should never be drawn forth, ordered, nor deleted. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
Well said there, Rex. All right. Up next, we have A Bohemian Life by I Love Poems. And we do have a SoundCloud for that one. So, I see Felon had to go. Good night, Felon. Always great to have you join us.
Good night,
And we do have a recording for that. So, here we go.
I love poems. My shadow from my yesterday. Mon ombre d'hier. My shadow from my yesterday. There you were, looking at the vast sea, dancing with a salty
okay,
wave.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and stop this because it was obviously a confusion. I'm thinking Sola must have sent me the wrong link or something. I'm not sure, but those obviously did not match up. All right. And while my voice is not nearly as gentle as Saul was, and I am in no way going to attempt French, I will go ahead and give the English part a rich part. And sorry about that. I'm not exactly sure where things got miscommunicated, but, you know, yeah, it happens. All right. This is A Bohemian Life by I Love Poetry, and it goes like this. A free spirit like a dream, savoring day by day, neither worries about tomorrow nor cares for looks from others, hair flying in the wind and pain forgotten with a dance barefoot, wandering in life with no attachment. Stars watch her nights far from sadness. Azure sky inspires her days. Close to happiness, will it last forever? End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Now, what'd you think?
Oh, no, you don't want to hear me butcher French. Trust me.
Right. French, no, I don't think... Un esprit ouvert qui fait la paix. Savons le jour à jour. Un geste aussi. No, I'm not going there either because I'm going to butcher it. I like the thought of free spirit like a dream, savoring day by day. You don't worry about tomorrow and what tomorrow brings. There's a thought of living in the moment. Air flying in the wind, pain forgotten. The dance barefoot wandering in life with no attachment. It's on the free spirit notion as well. And stars watch her night. There's that, again, that notion to the free spirit, but still living in the moment with those azure skies and stars, which is always a nice draw to one's thoughts.
Absolutely. Well, the only word I can pronounce in French with absolute certainty is danse, D-A-N-S-E, and that's only because that was part of my maiden name, which was Dansereau. And so although we probably, you know, changed the pronunciation slightly over the years, but anyways, I digress. First of all, I really liked your comment. I like, you know, it's interesting to have two rights in a row of different approaches from the same topic. But what I like about Saul was right is that, first of all, she has beautiful brevity, wonderful imagery. But to me, she's capturing the symbolism of a person who doesn't care what other people think. And I don't think we even need to limit it to the whole idea of a bohemian lifestyle, but rather just look inside ourselves and, you know, give ourselves the permission and the freedom to, you know, to step away from sadness, to enjoy the beauty of the sky, to just dance and not give a damn what anybody does or any way that they look at us cross-eyed or whatever. You know, I think it's a beautiful brevity and absolutely very well done.
All right, where you want to go next?
All right. Up next, we have, did I grab the next one? I think I did. Let me check. All right. Sometimes when it gets down to just two, I don't always get that opportunity to grab the link as quickly as I like. But, here we go. Up next is Evergreen by Eric Svensson. And go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
Evergreen by Eric Svensson. Game multiplied by love. 60 years stacked a multicolored calculus. Pick of 525,600 hours talk, culminating of lightning fast minutes. 31,536,000 in total. Life seconds split the Richter scale at 1.8922E+9. Grand Canyon schism between mathematics and love's pragmatics. Each embrace stop time and its gangly gum boots. Sensual slide into eternity. Zero gravity buoyancy. Afloat beyond man-made moats. Desire's drawbridge hoisted. Tower enclosed. We trick the den's needy timepiece. Love's revenue kept rent stable. No residual cost to hike inflation, game multiplied by love. Addition, outward subtraction, two hearts multiplied passion, subtraction seconds induced by satiation. Hours, minutes, seconds, devise actuarial strategy. Rent paid on time is easy. Differential, consequential love dances its soul through salsa. Angle lovers do vertical arithmetic. Determined addition, subtraction steps. Division of two bodies multiplies desire. Numbers game still multiplies love. Two tenants camp in communal heart space. Temple pillars placed well apart, united by love's horizontal architrave. Tried and tested tripwire switch never failed. Love's sharecropper season. Cornucopia horn begets gratitude. Pomegranate juice dribbles down your cheek. Like fig sacrifices itself upon your body altar. Evergreen defies all mathematical equations. And pump.
Great read there, Rex. Oh, my goodness. I tell you, if math had been this sexy back when I was in high school, I might have actually paid closer attention. But, you know, I really think this is a very clever write. I knew I was going to have you read it because I just don't do very well with numbers. And as soon as I saw those numbers, I was like, okay, yep, I'm assigning this one to Rex. But, you know, very clever to mix science and math and sensuality together. I really like, though, the zero gravity buoyancy of float beyond man-made moats, desire drawbridge hoisted, tower enclosed, we trick Big Ben's greedy timepiece. You know, the whole idea, we trick Big Ben's greedy timepiece. I like the reference to the tower, the clock tower, Big Ben, and the whole idea of tricking time, of, you know, just being so enraptured in the moment that you feel as if you have tricked time. Tangled lovers do vertical arithmetic, determined addition, subtraction steps, division of two bodies multiplies desires. I thought, you know, that the division of two bodies multiplies desires was a really clever way of using mathematics to say, you know, if you take that time apart, the desire to be in each other's company, to physically enjoy and appreciate each other, will multiply. I love sharecropper season, cornucopia horn begets gratitude. I mean, that ending stanza with the use, again, the use of a pomegranate, but also the ripe fig sacrifice itself upon your body altar. Evergreen defies all mathematical equations. I think those were just not only sensual in its way, but intelligent, because, you know, the evergreen is the evergreen tree not only symbolizes life, but it symbolizes fertility and the continuation of life. And it, if you look at the whole idea of like how everything's supposed to, you know, have that cycle of living and dying, and here's the evergreen that represents that kind of that eternity, that continuation of life, I think makes a really strong point. So beautifully written, very well done. And of course, Rex, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well, let's see. You know, it's got 525,600 hours talk. Culmination of lightning fast minutes, 31,536 in total. Ah. And then dropping the seconds blitzed down the Richter scale. That was a clever thought. I did like the angle in each embrace stop time and its gangly gum boot. Kind of stuck in the moment, so to speak. Potential slide into turning zero gravity buoyancy, afloat beyond man-made moats. But there's that sort of cutting oneself off. And then desire's drawbridge hoisted. So again, cutting oneself off. Tower enclosed, we trick Big Ben's greedy timepiece. There's that note of no one ever tricks time because time is ever ticking and ever evolving in the moment. It gives birth that sort of trying to package oneself so the minutes don't get lost. Yet we still do. And he hits on Love's revenue kept rent stable, no residual cost to hike inflation, numbers gained multiplied. Love, he's running this quite like an actuary, and he actually drops that in here. Hours, minutes, seconds, devise actuarial strategy. And actuaries paste numbers to people based on their lifestyles, what they do. I mean, you get lower notes and higher costs for premiums on life insurance if you go skydiving as opposed to, say, sailboating, things like that. If you fly planes a lot, again, higher notes to thoughts in those angles as well.
Oh, wow.
I did another one in that actuarial strategy. Rent paid on time is easy. Differential. Consequential love dance into solitary salsa. Tango lovers do vertical arithmetic. Determined addition, subtraction steps. Division of two bodies multiplies desire. That is that nice touch there. Addition, subtraction, and division, plus multiplication, all in the same two lines. And they hit on that notion of how tango lovers work their magic, the step and what it does. You push forth with some steps and then back on others. And then the twirl come with the division, two bodies, the multiplies desire, the sort of how the dance progresses itself. I thought that was clever. And last couple of lines, pomegranate juice dribbles down your chin. There's that touch to a life and what do on the heaven bound, so to speak. Right fig sacrifices itself upon your body altar. Again, ripe figs, a little sensual note. And evergreen dye defies all mathematical equations. It's called evergreen because it's evergreen. It never loses anything off itself unless it's the branch is dying and needs to be cut or the tree itself gets burned out of existence. Nicely done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I really like how you caught on to, like, I feel like my mind always shuts down when it comes to mathematics. And so I feel like there was, my eyes and my brain tended to go more towards the non-mathematical elements of the poem. And I feel like by listening to your comment where you were talking about life insurance, that you filled in a lot of holes that I missed. During my read, and I really appreciate that.
Well, I wouldn't have gone there if you hadn't thrown in actuarial. So that comes, there's a whole big book, and you look up things, and you run through it, and
give somebody their lot. Yeah, you do this, 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 and this. Not so good. Your lifestyle needs to improve if you want to get better rates. But since you don't want to, you're stuck with what we're giving you.
Yep. Yep. Unfortunately, it is one of those things that does happen. All right. Well, I'm going to go. Can we go ahead and move on to the next poem so we can get a couple more done? I'll take that silence as a yes. All right.
Yes.
Up next, we have Utopia's Whisper by Blatant B, and it goes like this. There was a dream, a man made hope where the land was free and the Homo sapiens won. But it was misleading, but we needed it because it gave us hope. We would never imagine nature to hurt us. As any great tale, there were twists which unfolded sequentially, but like an avalanche, it snowballed. Human nature was cunning, inherited by sin. Its goal was greed, and the word more developed. Women and men alike looked at each other, started comparing questions, started coming up. Soon value was put on how much more certain things were desired. Soon exchanges were made by means of barter, but human nature was a step ahead. Soon the idea of power existed. Why exchange if I can overpower? And so human nature won again, destroying the idea which was utopia. Human nature evolved and nature fought back for a balance will always be restored. But it was too late for mankind. Some had everything close to their utopia. Some had, some less. Many generations had none. That is why we pay rent. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And Blatant kind of hits on the notion of the time before time when we lived as part of nature instead of ruling nature, where nature was the bomb and we understood its motives, its hysterics, and that which it gave. And we've forgotten all that. I think that's the general idea in our usurpation of everything. We have gotten to the point where power means everything above all else. And renting people, so to speak, is just another piece within that ploy. All right, how about you?
Well, first of all, great comment there. Yeah, I really like how deep Blatant B went with this. And he does have a really intriguing way of writing with a style that's all his own and offers up food for thought on social commentary. This actually makes me think of when Dexter and Faziana did a show on money and people's thoughts on money, which was actually quite an interesting show because, you know, like, and this to me delves into that whole idea of how money, bartering, became part of a man-made system, you know, and the whole thought of, you know, how, you know, because bartering became an important part of having an organized society, but then the whole idea of greed and more took over, and the human nature realized, you know, why? You know, why should I barter when I have the ability to overpower? I think that stands in particular that Blatant B wrote about the, you know, overpowering is really just an important part of how too often we view, you know, each other or view our competitive nature. And I do like also how you touched upon, Rex, that the idea that we were once in touch with nature. You know, we were once, life was balanced. And then, like, the time before time, and then it all kind of started falling apart. But, and I also like how he pulls the title of the musical Rent into the last line, But the whole idea, almost as if the rent we pay isn't just the money you dish out for your house or your apartment, but the rent we pay is the consequences we suffer for just for drawing away from the original plan of the earth, of the, you know, gods or whatever you want to call it, to be connected with each other and with nature in a loving way. So I just think it's excellent right on human greed and very well done. And up next.
All right, what's that?
All right. Oh, my goodness. Look at that. It's beginning to look in late night poetry like there's nothing but a dancing cow all by herself. Jeez, she looks lonely. All right. Up next, we have A Year by Sam Sampson. And will you go ahead and give that to you, please, Rex?
A Year by Sam Sampson. They found her lying down as if asleep. The way that she died, quite evident. A note told of the truth she had learned and why she would end her own life. Misunderstandings and strife. He left her wanting much more than he could give. He had burned his bridges, no going back. A year to the day after they met, he left. Misunderstandings and strife. Too much had gone under that bridge he had burned with no more tears to shed. That's how he measured that year in his life. All right, Pam, what you got?
All right, great read. Well, first of all, I always enjoy seeing Sam and his poetry in our contests and in shows. He's got a wonderful, straightforward style that I enjoy. I also like how this is almost, and I don't know if it was intentional, but there's a kind of a shaping almost of like, it reminds me of steps, the whole idea of climbing steps up or down to reach, you know, the end or the beginning of life. But he really, I mean, when you open up with, they found her lying down as if asleep, the way that she died, quite evident, a note. You grab people's attention right away. There's, you know, nobody can deny the tragedy that is being written about here. Yeah, I like how this almost seems to be two different parts. One about the woman who just, for whatever reason, could not hang on anymore, who took her life in her hands. And then how right in the middle, like, there's the word he. And because it starts with they, and then he. And so you see right then and there that he has been left alone. He has been left alone to deal with his sadness. And there was no going back. You know, the too much had gone under that bridge. He had burned with no more tears to shed. That's how he measured that year in his life, is the whole idea of, you know, how much he had truly given up opportunities and how many tears he had shed. So excellent write and very well done.
All right, thank you, Pam. Well, looks like that second run. It's on that note of regret. Bridget, no going back. A year from the day after they met, he left. Misunderstandings and strife. Too much had gone under that bridge. He had burned with no more tears to shed. That's how he measured that year in his life. There's a whole lot of regret packed into that one stanza there. And the one up front is kind of stark in itself. Maybe that regret is in the knowledge of the suicide itself. And spent a year paying penance, so to speak.
I like that. You're right. I could see that. you know, like that kind of survivor's guilt and feeling that need to, you know, to serve some sort of almost like a self-imposed, Yes, almost if metaphorically flailing your own back as you're kneeling on the cement floor. All right, I'm going to go ahead and bring us on to the next poem. We only have one more after this, but I think we'll hold off because it's Becky Friend, and she said she might call in, so I'll save hers for next week. Up next is Unwholesome by Iona Kosma, and it goes like this. Lackluster eyes and seashell house, finding the way to the south, no, to the north, beating down, obliterating walls to see the rising stars from down below. Bohemian by birth, she loved the flooded floors, pining men of 3 a.m. who drank brandy, far from the maddening crowd and its nexus, convulsive dancers in a trance. Come see the city lights, come see the choirs from a tent for two risen on top of a garbage mound, wearing those rags who suit you so well. Come to orphaned kids town and cower down with the bent up north, no south, to the fire. She'd seen a flicker, and that was all of it. Took to cling upon the falling star like starving lover with a little hole in her heart, the home of hurt. End poem.
Great read, Anne. The contrast is double. Look at that. Lackluster eyes, these shell house, finding the way to the south, no, to the north. Beating down, obliterating walls, see the rising star from down below. Looking for that northern star there. I like that second one. Bohemian by birth, she loved the flooded floors, the pining of men of 3 a.m. who drank brandy, far from the maddening crowd in its nexus, the lost dances in a trance. Far from the maddening crowd. It's a nice touch in that one, too. And then back down to the ending. Down with the beat of north, no, south, to the fire. And that was all it. But to cling upon this falling star like a starving lover, a little hole in her heart, the home of hurt, the crave that finishes out that. Nicely done, Iona. All right, your turn.
All right. Well, first of all, great comment there. I really like, to me, how this kind of captured the spirit of the musical Rent. I mean, to me it did, because it captured the ugliness of almost like a homeless lifestyle, a lifestyle of prostitution. To me, and it was beautifully written, like, and I really like when people write poetry on subjects that are ugly, but do it in the kind of imagery that just is beautiful. I do like how she opened up with lackluster eyes and seashell house. You know, there's something, because seashells are so fragile, and so it just seems as if the seashell house represents the woman's entire body just falling apart from being used and from using drugs. And I like to use convulsive dancers in a trance. Come see the city lights. Come see the choirs from a tent for two risen on top of a garbage mound. I like that the come see, because there's almost like when they used to have like freak shows or circus, traveling circuses, and you'd pay your dollar and they'd say, you know, come see a unicorn or whatever, and you'd walk in after paying, and there would be like a goat with a fake horn on its head, or whatever. And it has that feel of, you know, like, you know, this is going to be beautiful. There's going to be lights. There's going to be choirs. And then you look and you walk through the city and you realize how ugly it truly is, that, you know, that children are orphaned. And I just, I thought that was powerful. And then to bring it all into the whole idea of somebody starving for love and affection that has that hole in their heart that just can't be filled. You know, I think it brought down to it like a wonderful personal touch of heartbreak and loss. So just an excellent write all the way through and very well done. And I'm going to very much enjoy judging this contest, I think.
What we got left?
We have one left. Which is by Betty Friend, but she said she was going to call in, or Becky Friend, but she said she was going to call in, so I'm saving hers for next week. And before I let go ahead and have you wrap things up as you see fit, I'm going to mention some contests for upcoming shows that need rights. All right, first of all, for later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, Twisted Tuesday's Duality. Fill My Eyes is running a contest for that, and she does need rights, so make sure to check it out. Then for Wednesday, The Art of Seduction, I am running a contest for that, and with poem lines from All Poetry Poet Mandy 42, I highly recommend checking that out. She's got a beautiful, inspiring poetry. And then for Friday's After Midnight show, I am running a contest with various quotes on the subject of superstition since it is Friday the 13th. And, of course, we have all kinds of excellent shows and contests. You know, everybody make sure to check out the contest and the topic board the Late Night Poets hosts and hostesses are running because there's always something to suit everybody's taste. Oh, yes, and this Thursday's 10 p.m. show, Double Helix, Afasiana and Dexter are celebrating the one-year anniversary of their show. And so the topic of their show is writing about an anniversary that you experienced. And it can be, but does not have to be limited to a romantic anniversary. It's anything that you started doing and continue doing or stopped doing or, you know, whatever, something that you are celebrating the anniversary of. And then, of course, Rex has part two of his open music night on Sunday at 10 p.m., and I always just really enjoy music-inspired poetry. So we have an awesome week coming up, Rex. Anyway, great show tonight, and wrap it up as you see fit.
I think you just did. All right. yes, great show. Thank you, Pam. And Thomas and Belle, thank you for stopping in to first give us a birthday tip-off and a poem. Tom and Belle for hanging out for a while and reading and commenting. Thank you very much. And we'll do this again next week. All right, my freaky darlings. It is the end of yet another show. Good night, all.
Good night, Rex. Good night, everyone.